outside your window. How many sugar cubes it would take to fill that view. Then think how many it would take to build a universe. Atoms, in short, are very abundant. They are also fantastically durable. Because they are so long-lived, atoms really get around. Every atom you possess has almost certainly passed through several stars and been part of millions of organisms on its way to becoming you. We are each so atomically numerous and so vigorously recycled at death that a significant number of our atoms, up to a billion for each of us, it has been suggested, probably once belonged to Shakespeare. A billion more each came from Buddha and Genghis Khan and Beethoven and any other historical figure you care to name. The personages have to be historical, apparently, as it takes the atoms some decades to become thoroughly redistributed. However much you may wish it, you are not yet one with Elvis Presley. So we are all incarnations, though short-lived ones. When we die, our atoms will disassemble and move off to find new uses elsewhere, as part of a leaf or other human being or drop of dew. Atoms, however, go on practically forever. Nobody actually knows how long an atom can survive, but according to Martin Rees, it is probably about 10 to the power of 35 years, a number so big that even I am happy to express it in notation. Above all, atoms are tiny, very tiny indeed. Half a million of them, lined up shoulder to shoulder, could hide behind a human hair. On such a scale, an individual atom is essentially impossible to imagine, but we can, of course, try. Start with a line the length of a millimeter. Now imagine that line divided into 1,000 equal widths. Each of those widths is a micron. This is the scale of microorganisms. A typical paramecium, for instance, is about 2 microns wide, 0.002 millimeters, which is really very small. If you wanted to see with your naked eye a paramecium swimming in a drop of water, you would have to enlarge the drop until it was some 40 feet across. However, if you wanted to see the atoms in the same drop, you would have to make the drop 15 miles across. Atoms, in other words, exist on a scale of minuteness of another order altogether. To get down to the scale of atoms, you would need to take each one of those micron slices and shave it into 10,000 finer widths. That's the scale of an atom. 1/10,000,000th of a millimeter. It is a degree of slenderness way beyond the capacity of our imaginations. But you can get some idea of the proportions if you bear in mind that one atom is to the width of a millimeter line as the thickness of a sheet of paper is to the height of the Empire State Building. It is, of course, the abundance and extreme durability of atoms that makes them so useful, and the tininess that makes them so hard to detect and understand. The realization that atoms are these three things, small, numerous, practically indestructible, and that all things are made from them, first occurred not to Antoine Laurent Lavoisier, as you might expect, or even to Henry Cavendish or Humphrey Davy, but rather to a spare and lightly educated English Quaker named John Dalton, whom we first encountered in the chapter on chemistry. Dalton was born in 1766 on the edge of the Lake District near Cockermouth to a family of poor but devout Quaker weavers. 4 years later, the poet William Wordsworth would also join the world at Cockermouth. He was an exceptionally bright student, so very bright indeed that at the improbably youthful age of 12, he was put in charge of the local Quaker school. This perhaps says as much about the school as about Dalton's precocity, but perhaps not. We know from his diaries that at about this time he was reading Newton's Principia in the original Latin, and other works of a similarly challenging nature. At 15, still schoolmastering, he took a job in the nearby town of Kendal, and a decade after that, he moved to Manchester, scarcely stirring from there for the remaining 50 years of his life. In Manchester, he became something of an intellectual whirlwind, producing books and papers on subjects ranging from meteorology to grammar. Colorblindness, a condition from which he suffered, was for a long time called Daltonism because of his studies. But it was a plump book called A New System of Chemical Philosophy, published in 1808, that established his reputation. There, in a short chapter of just 5 pages out of the book's more than 900, people of learning first encountered atoms in something approaching their modern conception. Dalton's simple insight was that at the root of all matter are exceedingly tiny, irreducible particles. We might as well attempt to introduce a new planet into the solar system or annihilate one already in existence as to create or destroy a particle of hydrogen, he wrote. Neither the idea of atoms nor the term itself was exactly new. Both had been developed by the ancient Greeks. Dalton's contribution was to consider the relative sizes and characters of these atoms and how they fit together. He knew, for instance, that hydrogen was the lightest element, so he gave it an atomic weight of 1. He believed also that water consisted of 7 parts of oxygen to 1 of hydrogen, and so he gave oxygen an atomic weight of 7. By such means was he able to arrive at the relative weights of the known elements. He wasn't always terribly accurate. Oxygen's atomic weight is actually 16, not 7, but the principle was sound and formed the basis for all of modern chemistry and much of the rest of modern science. The work made Dalton famous, albeit in a low-key English Quaker sort of way. In 1826, the French chemist P.J. Pelletier traveled to Manchester to meet the atomic hero. Pelletier expected to find him attached to some grand institution, so he was astounded to discover him teaching elementary arithmetic to boys in a small school on a back street. According to the scientific historian E.J. Hognard, a confused Pelletier, upon beholding the great man, stammered, "Est-ce que j'ai l'honneur de m'adresser à Monsieur Dalton?" For he could hardly believe his eyes that this was the chemist of European fame, teaching a boy his first 4 rules. "Yes," said the matter-of-fact Quaker. "Wilt thou sit down whilst I put this lad right about his arithmetic?" Although Dalton tried to avoid all